Please be seated. So our story today is about judgmentalism and mercy. In this story, we get to meet Simon, not the disciple, but Simon the Pharisee. And the Pharisees, you may recall, they were kind of the self-appointed religious experts of the day. Now, they are often the brunt of our modern-day retrospect judgmentalism and finger-pointing, so it's important to know they were well-intended. The Pharisees had the best of intentions. What they wanted to do was to try to perfectly love God by following all of the law exactly and perfectly right. You can anticipate the problem with that, however, because very quickly they began to see themselves as the ones who were right, with the extension then that others were wrong. They were good, others not so much. So when Simon the Pharisee had Jesus to his home for dinner, this woman shows up, she crashes the party, she starts weeping at Jesus' feet, she anoints his feet with her tears and dries them with her hair, and Simon did not understand the significance of what was going on. Maybe you remember a time when you felt so guilty, so dirty or awful because of something you have done, or maybe worse, something you're afraid you have become, that you were convinced that there was no hope of forgiveness for you. In those times, and I hope they are rare, we feel so hopeless, we don't even ask. Because we're afraid the answer is going to be no. So all we have is our inner darkness and our tears. And we're told today that the woman wasn't just crying, we're told she was weeping, right? And I remember as a kid wondering, how could she wash his feet with her tears? And I'm thinking, she might have been crying the way you do when there's no break between the tears. Huh? And it's just a steady stream. And your pain and your shame and your fear all comes running down your cheeks in an unending flow. A time when we can't even put those feelings into words. We feel so awful. That's what she brought Jesus. Now, Simon's response strikes me as so interesting. After watching this woman crash his party and sobbing, just falling apart at Jesus' feet, Simon's response is not mercy or sympathy for her. His response is not amazement that Jesus forgives or joy at mercy. Oh, no. His response sounds more like angry jealousy. It's judgment. He says, she's a sinner. Then he turns on Jesus. If that man was really a prophet, he'd know what kind of woman that woman is. She's a sinner. She doesn't deserve mercy or anything from Jesus. See, in his world, Simon's world, sinners were not welcome to God's grace. They didn't deserve to have access to a teacher like Jesus. God was for good people like him. People who followed the rules, who did the right thing all the time. So this woman had no right. So then Jesus tells Simon a story. And he asks Simon, so which one is going to be more grateful? And Simon answered, well, of course, the one who had more forgiven. And Jesus said, yes, right answer, Simon. Now, what Jesus didn't ask is, by the way, Simon, how much do you think you need to be forgiven? Simon sounds like he felt like he deserved God's favor because thought he was so good. And his actions indicate that he thought that any love or mercy shown to the woman who he called a sinner somehow happened at his expense, as if God's love and mercy is a limited commodity. So if God loves her, there's less love to go around for him? Sounds to me like a couple of kids with one brownie. It's like he had some kind of sense of indignation. I followed all the rules. I've done all the right things to earn God's attention and favor. But what's the point? What's the point if this sinner can just waltz in here, cry and beg at Jesus' feet, and then be forgiven? Simon portrayed the sense that he didn't need forgiveness, didn't need mercy. But the woman who we're told is a sinner, she knew it. She knew she was a sinner. She knew she was not entitled to anything. She did not deserve forgiveness. She did not deserve God's grace. So she didn't even ask. We don't know for sure why. Maybe she was afraid. Maybe she thought it wasn't a possibility. So she wept and washed Jesus' feet. And Jesus forgave her. Not because she washed his feet, but because her actions showed she didn't believe she deserved anything. She was helpless and hopeless and powerless, completely throwing herself at Jesus' feet. But did you notice in her story, Jesus does not offer Simon words of forgiveness? Not because Simon didn't ask, but because Simon acted like he didn't think he needed it, because in his mind he wasn't a sinner. See how it works? Simon's judgment to the woman had a bunch of effects. It blamed her. It led to his suspicions about Jesus. You know, remember he said if Jesus was really a prophet, he'd know what kind of dirtball sinner woman this woman is. And then worst of all, there was his entitlement and his arrogance that led to his own failure to see that he needed forgiveness too. His fingers pointing all over the place. At the woman, at Jesus. It's a clever ploy. Trying to look good by pointing out how bad someone else is. By the way, it's an election year. Spoiler alert, we're going to see some of that coming up. I'm just guessing. But the deal is, if we want to point fingers, we need to start with ourselves. We need to assess how we fall short of God's will, how we take God's love and grace for granted, how we like to get selective with our confession, how we like to rationalize away what we do is saying, oh, it's really not that bad, it's okay. Now, of course, we need to be careful with that, because for some of us, it's easy to fall into the pit of thinking that we are worthless failures, that we are so bad we're a waste of oxygen and we can't be forgiven. In the therapeutic world, they talk about the difference between guilt and shame. Guilt says we have done something wrong so we can be forgiven. Shame says there's something wrong with us. There's a flaw in me, and that cannot be forgiven. See the difference? Satan wants us to move past guilt right into shame so that we can see only hopelessness and despair. And sometimes we attempt to live in the polar opposites, believing at one extreme that we don't need forgiveness because we followed all the rules, and on the other end, a kind of poisonous shame with its own fear and darkness. But both of them are too extreme, because we are not all one thing or all another. We are not all sinner. We are not all saints. Oh, we're Lutherans, right? Luther told us this a long time ago. He said, we are simultaneously saints and sinners. We are both and. We are not perfect, and we are not awful. God redeems us. We are always both. We are not all one thing or another. The truth is, as long as we are alive, we will remain sinful. We can't not be sinful. It's part of the package. In the church, we often talk about original sin. Now, the myth is that means that we're born dirty, flawed, bad, or somehow icky. That's not what this book tells us. This book tells us when God created us, it was good. In fact, it says it was very good. Oh, here's the problem. We are made in God's image. Well, if we're made in God's image, who do we try to be like? God. If you want to see what that's like, have a child or two. I'm revisiting this again with my 3-year-old grandson. Every single thing I do, he imitates. If you have kids of your own, you know that sometimes they imitate exactly the one thing you do not want them to, particularly in front of your parents. Okay. God does not punish us for that tendency. We don't punish our kids for imitating us. I have a 2-year-old lab at home who's a bird dog. He's trained to hunt birds, pick them up and bring them to you. So last week, Ruth is out in the garden pulling weeds. We have a several, three, four. And Augie's out running around the backyard, and he picked up a young bird that fledged and was learning to fly, and he comes up and he brings it to her. We can't yell at him. That's what he's trained to do. My old dog Luther did that one time, drops the bird, shakes off all the dog slobber, thing flies away. It's part of the package. We can't not be sinful. That does not mean it's hopeless. Instead, God understands. God accepts us. He knows exactly who we are. Okay? God doesn't punish us for that, but rather God calls us to follow him. And what Jesus does is he reconciles us. He does not take away our humanity, because part of the package is our sinfulness. Jesus does not take away the way that we are made in God's image. God redeems us and restores that relationship so that we can more fully live in God's image. And letting go of our sense of power and control, and letting God lead us, and differentiating the two. Jesus is not out to punish us for being who and what we are. Jesus accepts us. He restores us. He reconciles our relationship with God with understanding and forgiveness and love and mercy. But sometimes we forget that. The two characters in our story today, the difference between them was Simon did not think he needed forgiveness, so he didn't receive it. The other one, the woman, she knew she needed forgiveness, knew she didn't deserve it, and she was forgiven because she needed it. Jesus said, whoever's forgiven much loves much. Whoever's forgiven little loves little. Friends, don't be afraid. There's nothing we can hide from God. There's a whole lot we can be forgiven for. No need to be proud, no need to hide it, but bring it. Lay it at Jesus' feet. Sometimes we're sobbing, sometimes we're amazed at how silly we can be. But bring it, leave it there. And Jesus forgives us much. Much. And in response, we could love even more.